Deputy Minister and your delegation. It's now 10:05. I think we should start. There are other members who said they will join us. Today we need to finish early. We need to prepare. We need to puff ourselves for the sauna tomorrow. So, and organize something to wear for tomorrow. So, yeah, I know, Anos, you don't want. Yeah, you're covered on that one. Trina, we are not covered. thank you very much, honorable members. I'm declaring the meeting officially opened. The first item there on the agenda is introductions, which will start with the members. My name is Matibe Chitarege Baldwin. I'm the chairperson of the Select Committee on Public Enterprise and Communication. Then we'll allow honorable members to introduce themselves. I'm from Limpopo, because in the NCOP we represent provinces. Yeah.
Good morning, honorable members and ladies and gentlemen. My name is Teboho Modise. I'm the member of this committee. I'm representing Northwest in the NCOP.
Morning, Chair. Good morning, everyone. My name is Andrew Arnold. I'm also a member of the committee representing the Western Cape.
Morning, Chair and colleagues. My name is Mabatu Krause from the Northern Cape.
We are on the queue. You were next.
Osan Bonani, Chomonyambi from Pumala.
Thank you very much. Then we'll come to the Deputy Minister and your delegation. How you do it, it's there. They can start there and you finish, or you start, they finish. You can start there.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Bongani Mabuza, the PLO in the office of the Minister in the Presidency.
Morning, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Vikile Mahlope in the office of the Deputy Minister.
Good morning. I'm Zanele Mugati from GCIS. I'm responsible for entity oversight.
Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Msofuki Takashe. I am the Director of Projects of MDDA.
Good morning, members. Deputy Minister, I'm Yasin Asman. I'm the CFO at MDDA.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable Deputy Minister and members. My name is Cheryl Langbridge. I'm from the MDDA.
Morning, Chairperson, Honourable Deputy Minister and members and colleagues. My name is Zukiswa Poje. I'm the CEO of the MDDA. Thank you.
Morning, Chair. Morning, colleagues. My name is Tembisuwe. I come from MIT. I'm in the Presidency.
I see you are looking at me, Mamkaus. Honorable Nana, when you arrived, we had already introduced ourselves as members, but I'll give you an opportunity to introduce yourself.
Thanks, Chairman. My name is Mlindi Nana from the Eastern Cape.
Thank you very much. Then we'll allow the secretariats to introduce themselves.
Good morning, Deputy Minister, and everyone. Sorry, my name is Pumelele Loli Sibisi. I am the committee secretary.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Yolis Orlando, Parliamentary Communication Services.
Good morning, Bulolan Fekane, Secretary.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Dudu, Dudu Meti from Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Thank you very much. Everyone has introduced themselves. All of them. Okay. I see there is a person there.
Good morning, members. My name is Sulwile Mazanzi. I'm a media researcher. I'm a member of the public. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You are all welcome.
Sorry, just introduction. CEO, CFO, and I didn't get the lady.
I'm the acting director of strategy and M&E for MDDA.
Okay. No, thank you very much. The next item is apologies. I'll allow Secretary to deal with the apologies.
We have apologies from Honorable Ngwenya, Honorable Labuskagne, and also Honorable Bibi. Honorable Klute and Honorable Smith, they said they're going to join us later. Thank you.
And Honorable Nana has already joined. Yeah. No, thank you very much. We have requested Deputy Minister, the MDDA, to come and give a briefing to us on the challenges facing community broadcast sector, and we'll give you the opportunity to do that. I think it will be important that, just to give a background of MDDA, we've got new members who might not know what MDDA stands for and what are the issues there. Just a brief background, and then you go to the presentation. I know it will be a repetition for Honorable Nyambi and Honorable Nana, but it's important just to give that a brief background and then go to the presentation. I'm handing over to you, Deputy.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the invitation. I think since we were given the responsibility, this is our first time coming to account to the committee, or rather not account, but come and present and respond to questions which you have given us. I hope I'm audible. This is my voice. It can go beyond this. The MDDA has been in existence from 2003. In 2004, I think around June, July, we funded our first project. We are responsible for assisting the community media sector, that being print, electronic, and broadcast. Am I correct? Yes. So in the main, what we do is that we strive to bridge the gap which cannot be filled by your mainstream media components. Of most importantly is that the MDDA, we seek to ensure that our people receive news in their local area where they are found, in their mother tongue. If I can put it that way, that's just a summary. I will give the CEO to give a more meat presentation, but from our level one, the challenges that MDDA continues to find or experience is the understanding of MDDA from our people. For example, as the MDDA, if you do not have any CASA license, we cannot fund you. So you still find people who will say, I've got a building, I want to, or I've opened an NGO, I want funding for a radio station. a community radio station, and you ask them, do you have any CASA license? And they don't have. Others, when they fail in terms of complying with requirements for you to get any CASA license, they will jump and say, MTVDA is at fault, while that is not our competency. It's a competency of ICASA, which is with communications. But we have been doing some programs to interface the two so that we take our people along to understand that there is a difference between the two. There is also problems in terms of your community print sector, which is very trivial. There's less people playing at that space. Those, for example, if I come from Limpopo, I will say, is what is a local newspaper that you can think about? Rise and Shine in the Eastern Cape. So we've got a correct criteria, which the publication itself must showcase that it will also promote our languages and ensuring that our people in their comfort zone, they get the news as they are. Currently, we are only funding 4 TV. Is it 4? You call it 4 TV. But we are funding 4 community TV stations. That would be KTV, one in KZN and Soweto and Tshwane. Those are the only 4. We are also lacking in that space to ensure that, for example, Mpumalanga could also have its own community radio station which we could fund. One will ask, for example, that there's a Limpopo TV, why are we not funding them? They do not have, they're not licensed by ICASA, they are a multi-choice licensee, therefore we cannot fund them. The presentation that we're bringing to you today, the challenges which we also mapped up, solutions in terms of these are the challenges, this is what we are doing on towards that. One of the things when we got into the entity was that we had found that the board has 5 board members, and if one does not come, we have a board of 4, it does not correct. It makes things not to be efficient. We can safely say that we have advertised for the positions of the 4 board members, and the advert is out. I think it's closing on the 15th, if I'm correct. The other thing which we have done is that when we got into the institution, it was a skeleton. There was literally no executive. We can safely say we have appointed, we have got a CEO, we no longer have an acting CEO, we've got a CFO, we have, I think in the executive, we're left with one.
One?
Yes, we're left with one, and the others are junior, around 4, which we advertised last week, Sunday. So we are working on towards stabilizing the institution. Our main problem, MBDA has got funders, so you get money which is government itself funds the MBDA through treasury. We have got multi-choice, for example, channels the money towards MBDA. The SABC also channels the money towards the MBDA to assist us in implementing our mandate. Still, that funding is not necessarily enough. So what we have been able to do is to speak to News 24, what would you call the category?
Commercial print,
to say, how are you going to give back to assist with the community media sector? And they have committed in various ways. Others will say to you, those that you have funded for print, we will give them our platform to come and print, and they will print at a cost price, so they will not print and add a markup. And others will say to you, Captain, for example, will say to you, it's okay, we will assist you with training of your journalist, your community journalist, so that their publications can be up to standard, so they can compete with Sowetan or City Press and so on. And yeah, so basically that's in summary. But our biggest challenge, which unfortunately we can only do through talking when we get a platform, is to communicate to our people about what is the MBDA, our mandate, where do we end, where don't we enter? Because, for example, late last year, you would find that CENTEC wanted to close about the community radio station. And they were coming to us to say, they have been closed, and it is not in our space, it's not our space. If you've got a SIM card, which you are given by MTN, so MTN in the space, we'll call it ICASA. You must pay for airtime, airtime CENTEC. If you don't give them the airtime, they will then say they want to close. But safe to say that we continue to hold conversations in terms of how do we assist, even in modules to say, maybe instead of us celebrating that we're funding 20 radio stations per year, why don't we fund 10? And the rest of the 10, when we fund you with a full package which also gives you self-distribution, which means that even if you don't pay CENTEC, you can self-distribute, because our funding would have been comprehensive. Because the challenge which we've had ever since we've opened is that we've funded a lot of community radio stations, but once you leave them after 12 months, there's lack of sustainability because they are not able to pay for CENTEC. Even in the sector itself, things we continue to do workshops together with ICASA to teach them about complying, that you don't renew a license when it's 3 days behind. You must have foresight, you must renew your license on time. If you don't know how to do it, this is how you must comply. We also bring SARS on board to come and assist them for tax evasion, and not necessarily tax evasion, exemption if you are a non-profit organization, which are part of packages which you must be able to submit to ICASA so that you can get the license. I'll give the CEO to go into the meat of the issue.
Yes. No, I've given the DM. She can sub-delegate.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, Honourable Members, for inviting us. Like the DM is saying, it's the first time that we come into you, I think, in the sixth Parliament. I've already said that my name is Sukiswa Poje, and I'm currently the CEO. I'm not over the acting yet, because I was acting for 20 months or 21 months, so I'm tempted to say acting CEO, but I've been affirmed. Thank you very much, leadership. And I think you see with me that I bring a very diverse, vibrant team of executives. We shot with one to fill, and it is deliberate that we didn't fill it immediately, because the strategy one for us was strategic as well, in that the strategy had to be outlined for the next 5 years in order for us to see how we reposition the organogram in the entire organization. I must apologize upfront that I've added about 3 slides to the presentation as the chairperson was speaking, because the presentation just, the letter said challenges, we made 4 slides challenges, no context in terms of what the MDDA is. So I heard some whispers to say that you're not even giving us what the MDDA is about, and I think the Deputy Minister has done a pretty good job doing that. But really for us, it's really a constitutional mandate that we take very seriously at the MDDA, that people of South Africa ought to receive diverse information and diverse media. So it's access to diverse media for all. And it is a constitutional mandate that we carry with pride. So the mandate of the MDDA is really to encourage ownership of and access to media by previously disadvantaged groups. And the DM has already spoken to the fact that it is those languages, indigenous languages, that we support the most, because ours is to ensure that we bring voices to the voiceless, we ensure that we service communities that are actually are not properly serviced by the mainstream media. So we go to the rural area. So you'll see there's a slide that will tell you where we are in terms of the funding and which provinces and so forth. We not only provide funding, or we don't only implement our mandate at the MDA through the funding. What we also do, because our mandate is to develop and diversify the media, the airwaves, the print sector and so forth. So we don't only provide funding. What we also do is we do research. So the Deputy Minister said that we've got 4 televisions that we have funded. There's 2 others. There's Free State, it's Harambe, and there's another one. Which other one is also, there's so if a province comes to you and says, MDDA, sorry, I was at GCIS for 12 years. If it says MDDA, we need to establish if our province is ready to have a community television. We do that research. So we provide research to the sector. We also provide capacity building, and I will talk to that because I'll talk to the need for that and why we're going to focus on that. And this is just our vision in accessible, transformed, and diverse media, and that's what we actually about. We implement our mandate through those 5 strategic areas, but I think the most important one would be the core business, where we are actually encouraging the access to the media by the previously disadvantaged groups, and that falls under the program that is headed up by Mr. Kashi sitting there, who is the executive for the projects, because the MDDA Act describes our mandate as community media projects, and so that space is our core business. In this slide, we're just saying that we've been in existence through an Act of 2002. We funded the first project in January 2004, and we're just giving you a hint to say that, an overview to say that we've been funding the sector for 16 years now, and we have spent a total of 400 and about almost 500 million. In funding, and this just includes other funding as well. And in terms of the funding, the Deputy Minister has already said that in terms of our sources for funding, the government pays a bit of the funding. So when the MDDA was established, the agreement was that it will be almost a tripartite agreement. So it's a PPP between the government of South Africa through the communications portfolio, and it is also in partnership with major broadcasters and major print, which is the big 4. What happened was the commercial or major broadcasters are legislated to pay a certain 0.2% of a USAF levy to support the community media, and they do that religiously. In fact, we've got MultiChoice, it's the largest funder, and so we've got those, most of them paying through to us. It's our biggest funding at the MDDA. The money that comes from the major broadcasters through the USAF levy is the major component of our funding. The CFO is here with the numbers. And so then the other money was then supposed to, the community print was supposed to be supported by the commercial print. However, I think due to instability of both the MDDA, and you'd know that the communications portfolio also went through a lot of changes, even at leadership, executive authority level. The commercial print or major print then walked away in 2014-15, and so we're trying to lobby them back. In fact, we've got a meeting with one of them tomorrow to just concretize the things that we discussed when we met with them with the Deputy Minister last year. But we're actually saying on this slide that in the 16 years that we've been in existence, we funded the sector for about 500 million, and we continue. I'm sorry, it jumped. The next slide, therefore, talks to the community broadcast today. We're saying that about 285 community broadcasters are licensed in the country. However, I think at any given time, we're sitting at around 210, the ones that would be on air. And the reason for that is that the others' license have not been renewed. Others are fighting for their licenses at CCC, at the tribunal, at ICASA, for whatever non-compliance issues or governance issues or non-compliance to the broadcast licenses. And we also know about the NMAS switch off that happened last year, which ended up to 19 community broadcasters losing licenses. and I'm going to talk about what we intend doing, because we have met, we've got an MOU with ICASA, and we also have met and we're in discussions with the National Community Radio Forum to say what help can we provide to the stations that have been switched off. It's safe to say that they're not limited to the 19 that were switched off. The ICASA had been switching off some radio stations that they deem non-compliant. And we're saying that of that 285, or at least 200 that we think is on air at any given time, 156 has been funded by the MDDA. Now, the MDDA is should not and is not limited to the 156. The Act and the Constitution does not say you will select those that will belong to you as your beneficiaries. Ours is also then to create awareness in the provinces where we think that there is underfunding, and where, with the, for instance, the Northern Cape, we know it's vast. And there is some community radio stations there. I'm going to show you the map of where our footprint is, and we think that we should then also focus on the areas where we have not been. But honourable members, I think let me hasten to say that before we expand our footprint, we have thought it long and hard with the executive, and we've decided that in the next 2 years. We are going to do a thorough research that is going to tell us exactly where we are in terms of our mandate, what has been the impact, so that we craft strategies. And of the 156, 160 community radio stations, because that's where the most investment is, because that's where the infrastructure investment also is big, of the 156 or 160 that we have supported, how many have survived and why? How many have not survived even after injecting our investment there and why? So we're going to undertake that study, because as we move towards the MDDA that's going to be turning 20 years, we would like to come up with a sustainability model for the sector. And so we're going to do, it's not going to be a rush. I think for the next 2 years, colleagues, we've put ourselves to be doing benchmarking studies, thorough research and so forth, so that when we say we're 20 years, we can come back to the committees in Parliament to account to say this is where we put the money of the state in, and this is, and we can go back to the funders as well and say this is what we have done with your money. We also know that in terms of the challenges of the sector, that there was a moratorium by ICASA, and I'm not going to dwell on ICASA issues, but there was a moratorium. That moratorium has been lifted, and therefore ICASA has also begun to open and close for applications for new licenses. So we're putting together, Cheryl is putting together, because she's also responsible for communications and stakeholders, she's putting together a plan, an outreach, if you like, an outreach plan that targets those that licenses have been revoked. But also when we opened and closed for applications at the MDDA, we also saw that, and we noticed that not all community radio stations are complying with our bare minimum application requirements. Let me make an example. We sent out a call for applications. It closed in October. When we took stock, we received 179 applications. And honorable members, this is after we actually said over the years, we had accumulated a backlog, I think dating back to 2010, when we then decided in August last year that let's do away with backlog, let's eliminate it. Eliminating it to start from scratch, put together a policy on grant funding by the MDDA, and do away with this backlog. And why was that necessary? It's because the backlog that we found at the MDDA dated back to 2010. In fact, at some point it was 2008, and it was worth, just the radio was 250 million, and radio is better. The broadcast had a backlog of 600 million, and now remember that in terms of print, sorry, print was more than 600 million in backlog dating back to 2010. And we decided if a person had applied in 2010, we are not sure that the requirements are still the same. We don't even know if that enterprise or that project still exists, we don't know what the needs are, because it would have been almost 10 years later. So we eliminated backlog. We developed a grant funding policy for the first time at the MDDA with a clearer criteria, and when we go on roadshows, we're also going to be taking that policy and putting the sector into our confidence, explaining it. But more so, we said as executive, we said to the project team, projects, don't be eager to reject projects that are non-compliant. Tell us what are making them non-compliant in terms of our application requirements. And they say it would be your employment equity policy, it would be things like your editorial policy, the business plan and so forth, financial policy, financial projections, 3-year projections, and we said, all right. So what we'll do is when we go to these provinces, we will target the ones that have not had those documents, and we will provide templates to them, and we'll take them through our application process and our new application method and our new policy. In terms of where we've been, this is where we are, this is how we look, but I think when we come back, we would have drilled down. So for instance, if you look at Limpopo, we've supported 20, but that does not mean that there's only 20 community radio stations in Limpopo. So how we're going to enhance this slide is to show that in Limpopo, let's say there's 37 community radio stations. Let me make an example with KZN, because I know there's 34 community radio stations in KZN and one community TV. So if we say in KZN there's 34, we will show that there's 34, and we will then demonstrate in a provincial footprint that these are the district municipalities where we've been, and this is where we are not, and check if there isn't any other type of media that services that area. Because I think for us, the consideration and the appetite to expand is big, but we would not like to expand for the sake of expanding our footprint, whereas there's those ones that we've supported that are dying behind us. So we are currently taking stock. So that's just how we look in terms of the provinces. And you'll notice that the Northern Cape, and we know that it's large in terms of the land, but it is a smaller province in terms of the numbers. So we're asking ourselves, is the 5 good enough? Is it not? And we're going to go there. This is the television. The Deputy Minister has spoken to that. We've only supported 4. Why 4? Even though there's an appetite. Limpopo, for instance, is on the DSTV bouquet and other televisions. Television, given the money that we get, CFO, do we get 50 million from the broadcast funders per annum? So if we were to establish televisions, community televisions, we need at least between 20 and 25 million to establish one. It's a lot of money. So what we do currently is we then fund them for their transmission and other things, but to establish from scratch is actually very difficult for us at the moment, given our current funding model. But what we're also doing is we're putting together a... what is this plan to go and look for funding plan, where we want to go and lobby for money. We're also going to look for international companies, foreign donors and so forth. So we are putting together that plan so that we can free up some of the money that is available to us and bring more to the table so that we can do more, especially in the television sector. In terms of the reason why we are here, the challenges, I think, in fact, we could answer that question with one answer that says sustainability. I've already spoken to the fact that the Deputy Minister, I think, dwelt at large on sustainability issues. If we talk broadcasting, what are the issues that they battle with? It's high operating costs. We with the community sector, in fact, last year, DM, they petitioned you and the Minister. And in that petition, they actually said they've got a total debt of 108 million as broadcasters in the community sector. And it emanates from Centec, it emanates from SARS, it's SAMRO, it's SAMPRA,
It's a lot because this is a highly regulated space, the broadcasting sector, and so they owe a lot of money. But just the cost of doing business, let me make an example. If you are a new community radio station, so you've now registered the NPO, and now the new regulation from ICASA says that you must at least have been an NPO for 2 years, then you go to ICASA for the license. You apply for the license and so you get the license. The other thing that you must at that stage establish is how you're going to transmit. Are you going to be self-providing or are you going to be on Centec? And most of the community broadcasters have tended to be with Centec. It's a monopoly in a way as well. But what we're also doing at the MDDA is we've already put together a terms of reference to actually establish if there aren't small players, role players in the space that can compete with Centec. Why? Because the community radio stations that we have, even though we subsidize them when we fund them, to a limited 200,000 during the duration of the funding, what we found is that once they are on Centec, then they always perpetually on debt. Why? Because to set up a community radio station for transmission in Centec will cost you anything between 400,000 and 500,000. And Centec is already saying that is hugely discounted, 60% discount. And so what happens is because this is a small community radio station in a village, it's unable to therefore pay this 400,000, 500,000. Remember, sometimes it's a startup, so it's unable to pay upfront the 500,000. Sometimes it's challenging, like we've got a station that must pay upfront the 1 million. They can't raise that, especially because they're still off air, so they can't even generate revenue. So what happens is then, since they get into an arrangement where the Centec amortizes this amount, this setup cost over a period, let's say 10 years, but then the monthly subscription of 30,000 kicks in at the same time. So as they go off on air, they go on air, they're already indebted to Centec, and it becomes a challenge for them to catch up if the revenue stream is slow as it is now. So in this sustainability model that we are dreaming about and we're thinking about, and we're thinking it's something to actually consider, are considering that the MDDA would be turning 20 years. Our aim is to go back to the areas where these community broadcasters and community print, in fact, are, and check what's available as a source or what businesses are there and what is the market what potential for them. And the reason for that is because we then could teach them over time and try to win them from the MDDA by teaching them over time how to self-sustain. So you say there's a boxer here, there's a spy here, first thing first, how many are you? If you go to Vembe, I think it's 6 of them, community radio stations, which means if they're in close proximity, they're most probably competing amongst themselves for the same resources. I always make the example that, this anecdote that says, we must be realistic at the MDDA and as government in our quest to ensure that there's multiple voices in the airways. If we go to Tofimbaba, to my village in Kamama, and we say, okay, let's see what businesses are here, you'll most probably find one small shop, and then we say, okay, the people of that community, remember this is community media, the people in those communities are expected, one, to play a role in ensuring that the content is diversified and indeed it talks to the needs and aspirations of that community. That's number one. But the communities themselves are expected to support and sustain these radio stations. So I always make the point that I'm not sure that my mother, who is a pensioner, would actually then cough up money to support the station if she must choose between buying bread and buying electricity. And so that's where we come in. We therefore are saying that through this model that we'd like to put in place, would like to then take the stock of and say this is the category, and not limit it only to the MDDA current beneficiaries, even though we'll start there, and then we'll categorize them and say this is the batch that is in the ICU, because in Mahlabandlovu there is no way that station would never need our support, and therefore we take the point that these ones will always need our support perpetually and for good and forever. But what kind of support, what kind of limited support will be, and we put them in the red if you go with the robot model, and then you say, okay, these ones in the yellow or orange, what interventions are they looking for? And we open the doors, and then you go to the ones that you think these ones, no, they can survive without us, but then we can play a role in funding certain programs, maybe annually and so forth. So we're looking at the model like that, that would actually look at the entire sector and say where our intervention is needed the most and so forth, and we'll fine-tune things as we move along. I've already spoken.
I'm giving you 10 minutes.
I'm almost done, Chairperson. I'm almost done. I'm sorry. I just thought if we need to put that for the grant. Yes, then I think the issues of revenue generation, you know, we also putting out a terms of reference for audience research. If you are to sell to any investor or to any market, they're gonna ask you if you broadcaster, what your reach is. You know, who listens to you, and we don't have that statistics, and it's because it's PRC that does it, but for commercial broadcasters, and therefore we're actually saying who else plays in that space, should we collaborate with them, how much will it cost us, so that we ensure we're sure of the figures that we have in the sector. Skills are an issue in the sector. Most of the skills, and it is because that it is the high turnover, is because the stations are reliant on volunteers because of the nature of who they are, and therefore they're just the turnover. And so we don't mind training. We don't mind that we train and then we lose them to the commercial broadcaster or public broadcaster. We don't mind that. So we continue. And as a result, we've got an MOU with the CEDA because of its national footprint. We piggyback and we leverage on their capacity to train throughout the country. I think I'm done. So for us, it's really capacitating the sector, ensuring that we reduce the cost of them doing business. We look at the transmission model, which one should it be, hybrid, you know, are those that can go off Centec, they must go off Centec. We've got an example of Zibonelli and others, they've always been self-providing. So what is this thing that they're doing that can help us? And we're going to be embarking on such studies. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. That was the last slide.
Thank you very much. That is the presentation, and thank DM for the presentation. I will allow honourable members. Welcome, Honourable Clute, Honourable Smith. Yeah, welcome. We had already put your apology that you arrived. I knew that Honourable Clute cannot be absent for this one. He has got very special thing for community radios. Thank you very much. I'll then hand over to honourable members to engage with the presentation. You are starting, Honourable Clute.
I'm stopped.
you can't start. You arrived late. You'll be there. Honourable Jambu will start. Honourable Arnold, did I see your hand? Yes. Yeah. Mkause, and then Clute. You can come later. This was where here since we started. Honourable Nyambi.
The thing, Chair, let me start by welcoming the input by both DM and CEO, and indicate that I was a little bit lost when you said the Chair, we are meeting for the first time. I thought we went to MDDA, almost all of us, and we engaged, and there were issues that were raised then. And part of my understanding of us coming here is a continuation of that engagement, because we had a lot of issues that were raised then. I stand to be corrected.
We went to ICASA.
Not them today. It means I'm still in December. If that is the case, it means I'm still in December. It was a good presentation, Chair. My issue, DM and CEO, well, let me start by congratulating CEO. It's always good to have somebody instead of having umvango. You know, this acting thing is a problem in our entities and even in departments, even here in Parliament. So once you have somebody that will be held accountable on a permanent basis, then it's fine for us. It's making our life to be much more easier. Congratulations for being given that responsibility, Ms. Boche. The key position, like the one of company secretary, digital media coordinator, risk specialist, probably we can have a sense so that when we meet next time, we are able to say there is progress. That when DM are going to be able to deal with these positions, because as far as I'm concerned, they are very key and they are important, and it would be very difficult for such an important entity to be at optimum level if you have these key positions that are still vacant. I need to be assisted so that when we are doing the oversight, we have a sense with a deep, proper definition of a functional community radio station. Not in air, not off air, because it can be still on air, but it's not functional. I thought you were going to take the opportunity to use the past media report about the challenges. If I'm not mistaken, it was Sunday papers and even during the week papers when they reflected some challenges, and there was a long letter about the Soweto TV station and the community saying it belonging to them, but there were some developments that is causing some disruption there. So we can't speak with authorities, members of parliament relying on the media, but the opportunity of engaging you, I thought by now you might be knowing what is the situation, what is happening, because it's part of what might be coming to parliament when it's getting worse, but it can be assisted before it's getting out of hand, because the signs out of what we read was a clear indication that there are some challenges. The part that will make our life when doing oversight to you, DM, CEO, and the entire team, the difference between us and if you come to the portfolio committee and you come to the select committee, the difference between us and the portfolio committee, probably drafters of the constitution were very clear about our mandate as the NCOP. I like this slide because all of us already doing introduction, starting from the chair. He said we might have missed it. He said it's from Limpopo. The other one said it's from Eastern Cape. She said Northwest, Western Cape, Northern Cape, beautiful province. Then Limpopo. It's in Mpumalanga. So the slide that was showing the provinces, it was good, DM, but what was missing in that slide? When we showed all the community radio stations in all the provinces, but what is missing is to have a sense like I'm from Mpumalanga and you are saying in Mpumalanga there's 13, and I might get out here with an impression that we have got 13 that are on air, for an example, only to find that practically it's only 9 or 7 or 8, and there might be those that have some challenges. And even to be able to locate them when you get to those provinces, because it's not for us to come here to criticize, but it's for us also to assist you where there are some challenges. Why I was confusing MDDA is because it's when we're dealing with ICASA, dealing with the very same subject, that you'll have a community radio station, you'll try to tune to that one because it's always giving you relevant proper news, and there won't be a sound. And there was a story that was explained by ICASA when we were there. That is why I was confusing what we're doing too, because we dealt with the very same subject of, that is why we felt that it would be good to have MDDA. So it would be good for us to have a sense in our respective provinces about the different situations of those radio stations, so that when we go into a constituency work, we are not only asking you questions, but we are assisting where there are some problems. And I agree that the issue of governance to these radio stations, when I look at your budget for all the years, right from the inception 16 years ago to date, we have spent almost half a billion. It's almost half a billion. And the money for training and development, I think it's very minimal. It's 5% DM. So that 5% might be, in a way, a cause of the challenges that we have. If you can look at how we are spending when it comes to training and development, it can go a long way to assist and deal with the challenges. My last part question, it's the geographical footprint. I must say I was impressed about the entire presentation, how you have structured it and how you reflected our provinces. If you can probably in future or try to have, because I don't believe that out of the 9 provinces, talking from where I'm coming from, I'm from Mpumalanga, I know that there are those that I were trying for some years. And when you had that slide that was showing the geographic footprint when it comes to community TV, it's just focusing on, you know, in the past, DM, we always fight when we come here that it's painful for us to always see South Africa being turned to a triangle. It would be Jose Gauteng, then you come to here, Cape Town, then you go to Durban, KZN. But in that slide, whether it's a rectangle or it's something taking another form, even though it's not where we want it, it's good, because once you see your Limpopo, your Free State, your Northern Cape, then it's giving hope to a person representing Mpumalanga that probably one day we're going to have a geographic footprint that will reflect what we're representing here, because it's not a true reflection of what we represent. But on that one, it's exceptionally good, the one that is there. But there's another one after that one. It has graduated from a triangle, but it's another shape that I can't define, because you have your Free State, it's good, they are taking you out of the triangle. You have got Eastern Cape, well, Eastern Cape, they are completing the picture of your rectangle. Then you have got Limpopo, then we're celebrating when you see Limpopo in Free State. You know, I might, it might sound funny, I was, when we're dealing with that thing, yes, sport. But it's almost relevant to this one, DM. You had the Springbok coming back to South Africa when they were beat Babai to get to Japan. It was Gauteng. When they came back, they were received welcome by Gauteng. And when they started, it was good to go to Union Building. But they went to Soweto. They went to Soweto, Pretoria. The only correct part is Union Building. Then they went to Joburg again. Then they came straight to the triangle. Cape Town, Durban, and then probably because the captain was from that province, then they were beneficiary. But you have got 6-7 players from your Mpumalanga and others from Free State and what. But they're not even considered. And it was going to be possible to have one day or half a day spent in those provinces to inspire the young one coming. It's what I'm seeing there. If you're going to come CEO before the end of our term, whilst we're still here, and we're going to have something that will have Mpumalanga there, Northern Cape there, because those are the only two that are still missing now. then it will show that we understand that there was a purpose to have this province. Otherwise, let's just stop and leave those that are there to make you to account because they are catered. But it was a very good presentation that is assisting us to have a better sense and understanding where there are some challenges. Give us a definition of a functional one, so that when we were saying this one is not functional, then we are going to be on the same page, instead of using on air and off air, because that is, as far as I'm concerned, problematic. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Anas.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I think the CEO has given us an in-depth presentation, and dating back now from coming from the 20 years that the entity is now in existence. And we still are coming now with a new model. And it seems to me that over the past years, as the entity was there, things didn't work in terms of what their mandate is, and in terms of projects, in terms of assisting those disadvantaged communities, and be there also to capacitate the community. Because the community, like for example, the issues now that we had with the closing of radio stations, they came to you, they came also to us, they don't ask who must we go to. They go to the nearest person to them to ask for assistance. And I think also is the role now of the entity here is to assist the community. But the challenge that I'm seeing here, because I didn't see the organigram and everything of it, when you have an entity with an executive that is now, like you say, your top executive, and you have no one here, project management on the ground doing the work to empower those communities. Because the application also, when communities applied, there is also a process. I know they apply to CASA for the application and everything, but there is also a challenge for some of the communities that wants to, in terms of administration and everything. So I think there they can also play a role in assisting. And the other thing is, funding will always be a challenge here for the government. So the entity must go out. And I think next time when we come back, when they come back, they must come here with a plan in terms of how they will sustain the entity. Not only relying on government funding, but also outside sources that can sustain the entity. Because I don't want us to sit here next time when we come, there is no sustainable funding coming, and the entity didn't come here with a plan and say funding from which other countries or partners will also come and sustain the entity. Then, I want to check this one here, that they put on challenges, cost of premises. I can't understand why it is so difficult to go to the local municipalities and to have this rental, low rental and rental free premises. Is it so difficult to have that? And I think this is also one that can assist the entity in terms of the challenges of cost of premises that they must rent and everything like that. So I think they need to come also up with a program or a plan for that. Yeah, I think that's it.
Honorable Glut.
Thank you, Chairperson. Again, my apologies for being late. Not accepted, thank you.
I skipped you. No, you will come back. You were out when I was pointing there.
Thank you, Chairperson. Got a few questions and remarks. Just first, I just want to make sure currently it is only Centec that distributes signals, so there is no other service provider in that sense. Okay. And then I see one of the challenges you mentioned in the presentation is online broadcasting, which which basically means you have to have data to listen on the air. Are you in discussions with data service providers? Because that is one of the topics in South Africa, is making data more affordable. If I'm not mistaken, we have one of the highest data costs in the world. So are you in discussions with those service providers? You spoke about funding by the NDDA, and I almost want to say at any given time, any community radio station is underfunded. That's the nature of the beast. How can radio stations access that funding? What's the process to get that funding? One of the other problems, because I spent 10 years in community radio, is access to information, which is basically your news, your debates, your discussions, getting someone to give you information regarding, especially service delivery aspects. So access is very, for a community radio station, access to information is hard because you don't have the technical or human capacity to get that, so you need a journalist to phone someone to get information from that person. So that's the one problem. The other problem, and especially municipalities are very, they are the ones sometimes who don't have good relations with the media as well, especially community radio stations. So in that regard, so it's the two problems. It's, let's call it journalists, who don't, they don't do work for nothing. And then the other one, the poor public relations by, let's say, municipalities. How are you looking into that to achieve the access to diversified media? The other thing you mentioned was the access to research. My question is, there are so many universities who are actually, they have first or second year research students. Have you ever consulted with universities to have a partnership with them to start programs to also do research for community radio stations? And then the last question, as I understand, is that many commercial radio stations also have an obligation as part of their licensing agreement that they should give training and assistance to community radio stations. How many stations actually, commercial radio stations, actually do that? Thank you.
Honorable members.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, I hope that my wish was that the beautiful presentations that we see here was actually the reality of what we are seeing when we do oversight as members of parliament. Maybe we need to be told in depth the kind of support that the MDDA is giving to those community radio stations, because the reality is that what we see on paper is not what we see when we do oversight. And the Chairperson, part of their responsibility is to make sure that these people understand what is expected of them. They run a community radio stations. But the presentations which were made previously of a large number of community radio stations whose licenses were revoked, the question then comes, were they taken through what actually is expected of them before these licenses were revoked? Or was it just a one-way arrangement of coming to do inspection on this and then your findings goes, your word is final? Was that the case? And are they also given a chance to appeal? Because you've invested resources there. You've invested a lot of resources there. Then you just revoke a license, the building is closed with everything which is inside. And not even taking into cognizance the listeners, the local listeners, not even giving them an explanation of what actually transpired. Are they also given feedbacks when they submit renewals of what happened here? Are you gonna, is your license going to be renewed? If not, what are the real reasons? Because the presentation we received previously was not clear, because we came into, they gave us the picture that community radio stations were closed up, but we did not really understand, were these community radio station managers and staff taken through of what is expected of them? Or is it just an arrangement of coming to you and saying we're closing it down because you did not submit one to the Maybe if we can be given that information, it can be of great help. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. See you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Certainly, I'm going to be sharing the questions with my colleagues. I need some rescuing myself. But thank you very much, Honourable Members, for the questions. I think there was a question on the vacancies and the importance of the post. The company secretary resigned in October last year, so we have re-advertised the post. It's a very key position for us. The risk specialist and the media coordinator, I'm telling you, I think we advertising for the third time since I've been. The one issue with the MDDA is the low salary range, especially at that level. So we've been advertising, offering declines. We declined last month. We declined last year twice. It's like that. So we are going to the board, and we've done a job rating exercise towards the end of last year. We're going to the board to say it's become almost impossible to fill this, especially these two positions, the risk specialist and the digital coordinator, because of the salary levels. Everyone rejects us based on that. But we take the point that it's very important to fill all the vacant positions. A functional radio station really, I think, would be clearly defined by ICASA's framework, regulatory framework, where what we know is that when we adjudicate and assess applications for funding, those applicants, they've gone through social development, that's where MZU comes from in terms of registering the NPO or NGO or whatever the nature of the entity would be. And so that's the ecosystem. And then you go through to ICASA. ICASA is the main player here because ICASA grants the license. And the license will come with license conditions. And therefore, so they've got people that monitor whether the radio station is compliant or not compliant with the license conditions. What we have found when we have asked for compliance reports from ICASA, which we use when we also grant funding to the stations, is that most of them struggle with the issue of holding those annual general meetings with the aim to nominate or appoint boards, fully functional boards, but procedurally appointed boards. So that's where they struggle the most. And for ICASA and us, because when you've been given a license, that and you must comply with that, we also, through the application process of the MDDA, we also look at whether there is a fully functional board. Then ICASA's compliance report will tell us when the AGM took place to actually nominate the board. So most of the compliance of the community broadcasting or broadcasting industry is really regulated through ICASA. So for us, functional means you are on air, or functional means you are compliant with ICASA, and therefore we will assess you on the application for funding and grant you what we think we can afford as the MDDA. But really,
that it's largely an ICASA issue. We have read stories about the Soweto TV and takeovers and so forth, and I think we follow the news. What we can do as the FDDA really is to go, like I'm saying, we've put together. In fact, we thought that we would have started with this plan now. It's outreach. We're going on roadshows to all the provinces, and we said we'll do about two centers in a province where we are creating awareness about the media development and diversity, and to actually then target the ones that have been switched off over time by ICASA for non-compliance to see how we can help them. We will bring to those workshops, we'll bring SARS, we'll bring, because there's an SARS issue as well. And so we always bring SARS, because what the stations can do, community broadcasting can do, is to apply for exemption, but instead of doing that, they run, and then they end up with a debt. So we're saying, come, let's help you, because that also forms part of the sustainability that we're talking about. Because if you run away from SAMRO and SAMPRA and CAPASO and CENTEC and SARS and so forth, your debt just accumulates. It means you're just going to go under over time. I think we will bring the list of the detailed radio stations. We'll also rely on ICASA on getting that list. We know that 19 NMAS was switched off last year by ICASA, and those are the ones that we're also following up with ICASA and the other stakeholders to make sure that their applications are in order. There are organizations like SACRO, South African Community Radio Station Organization, which is an equivalent of the NCRF, which is the National Community Radio Forum, that are working with us to ensure that there is not only sustainability, that proper governance is adhered to so that the radio stations can sustain. And I think that the 19 of last year that was switched off, and we had a list in 2018 of 14, and 12 of those have been actually our beneficiaries. The training and development 5% is an issue for us, because as I'm saying that we're moving towards we're wanting to do research. We are busy with the capacity building programs, and sometimes we link up with universities like VIRTS. We've got contracts with the NCRF, not NCRF, what is the SASTA, and School of OSF, School of Journalism, I think Rhodes. So we do have partnerships with the universities for various reasons, and so it's research and it's also training. And so the 5% that is allocated to training and research, which we're saying is a challenge for us, we took it to the board in January on the 10th, and we are reviewing it. The reason it's taking us longer to review it is because it's in the regulation. So the way in which the money is divided at the MDDA is actually in the regulation. So the regulation is a matter of the minister. So we must actually then alert the deputy minister to alert the minister so that that can be promulgated. So there's a process to actually amend that, but it is doable. And I think we take the point about the footprint and the triangle, the Cape Town, the KZN. In fact, we did an impact study in 2016-17, and it does say that, except for, I think, Cape Town is not on the ones that the impact study said we'd overfunded. It was Limpopo, it's KZN, and the Eastern Cape that it actually alleged we'd overfunded. That's what the impact study said. Honorable Amos, we're still coming up with a new model. I'm sorry about that. So you're saying we're still coming up with a new model after so many years? I think organizations just revolve, and they must grow as the years. But it is also to take from the learnings of the previous leadership and see what we can improve, and I think we're trying to do that, and it is without actually undermining what has happened, but we're building and improving on what has happened. So this executive has indeed seen the need to put together a new funding model a new funding process, a new grant funding policy, which was approved by the board in July last year, and so we've started implementing it. And that is the one that we're going to be taking to the communities in the deep rural areas to say, this is what we've done, this is the reason we're doing it, and this is how we'd want you to work with us. We've engaged in terms of the cost of premises. We have found that those that are located in municipalities, like your North Coast, is it East Coast, not East Coast, the community radio station in KZN that says, we actually want the president to be the one coming to launch the station. He's very proud because he says he's got a very big premises. He's not renting because he's in a municipality. So we're engaging with SALGA because we think that as the umbrella body, they can actually, but there are stations that are already in municipalities, and those actually then are in good stead. You know, honorable members, there are times when we must go to the courts to fight for our infrastructure. You install a studio, two studios, it's on air, it's the production one, and then in a few months, it's actually, they've fallen in arrears with the rent, and our studio gets confiscated, and we must go and actually reclaim it through the courts. So we spend money fighting for our assets back. And so it is very important for us to actually find, low-cost rental areas. So we encourage community broadcasters to speak to you know, city halls and so forth, because where they can be accommodated by government, it actually it assists all of us, MDDA and everyone involved. And then I think Cheryl, I'm gonna deal with a few, and then from Honourable Clute, and then you can deal with the research ones. Suntech, is it the only service provider? No, it's not. But it's like Eskom, really. It's the one that is there, it's dominant. And it's government, but you've got we actually use this company for the broadcasting, Sound Fusion, so we're actually also doing study to check who else is in the market. We're going to test the market, but also the self-provision. Mamelodi and it's self-providing. Zibonele FM has long been self-providing. However, we take the point that the fact that not all community broadcasters may be self-providing now, there's some pros and cons with everything. One biggest thing would be the skills, the technical skills. So if you go to Centec, you guarantee that if you go down, you're off-air, and there is a rule that says if you're off-air, I think, for 3 days, ICASA may revoke your license, so you must inform them. And so because CETEC has got the capacity and the skills, which we will then leverage with them or on them when we say, okay, we'll take some off the grid. The Deputy Minister, and I'm not sure why she has not said this today, normally says, when we fund in the future, we may fund you and then give you a transmitter. We fund you, we give you a transmitter. But that needs proper groundwork to see what's going to be feasible, because even our geographic locations and our geography in the country, others have got mountains, others not, and so forth. What works better for those things? Those are the studies. In fact, there's so many targets on research in this 2020-21 ATP. It's not even funny, because we're just trying to establish a lot of things, because we would like in 20 years to say, this is what we've done, but this is how the MDDA is repositioning itself. This is how it's going to sustain the sector, and what does sustainability mean for the community community broadcasting. Yes, online broadcasting is going to need a lot of data. For that reason, in terms of our fundraising and stakeholder lobbying fundraising plan, last year we went and met with all the telcos. We've been to Vodacom, we've been to MTN. I think it's us that are slow, because we agreed. We went to them and we said, we would like to actually be on the digital space as well, because that's what is happening. We can't avoid it. And they said, we said to them, would you be, if we've got a newspaper, a Rise and Shine in East London somewhere, and we've got Ukatlamba, a community radio station in KZN, would you be able to zero rate the regions or the communities where these are, so that the people in those communities are able to access the radio station online, but without having to pay for data? And they said, no, we're not able to zero rate a geographic location. However, we can zero rate an app, a URL, or a website. That's what they said. That's what they're waiting for us so that we can start piloting. So those are the talks that we actually have been. And this year, we're actually consolidating. We've been, I think, last year, I think, acting, I think, is a good thing because I was completely out, you know, and completely running around last year because when you act, you don't know when the acting is gonna it's going to end. And so we've been to so many places. And when DM came, I took her along. We went to all the commercial print sector, and at first they were very grumpy with me when I took the DM. She charmed them. They're now on board. Texting is on board. We're meeting independent media today or tomorrow. Tomorrow. And so we're consolidating on all those what we have not tapped into. And I know that I'm told that MDDA has had a foreign donor before. We just, I think, the contract lapsed and we never made the follow-up. So we're also looking into tapping into those. And so we're bringing a lot of, and we're saying we're trying to put together a pool of resources so that if a station in Umlazi says, I need data, we know what MTN can do for them. And if it says, I need rent, we know what we can do for them. But that we just have in our pool a lot of stakeholders that can open those doors for them. So that's what we're doing. How do the stations access the funding application? Until the 6th of August last year, from the inception of the MDDA, it was walked through every day, 366 days, day and night, physical, online. So when we took the position to eliminate that 850 million backlog last year in August, we then took an initiative to right to everyone that had applied. Obviously, others bounced back and so forth to say we have this new method where we're going to open for 3 months, close, assess, adjudicate, respond. Open, so we're going into opening now and we are pairing the opening of the process with the outreaches or the road shows so that then we can assist people apply at the same time. That's what we're doing. But it's on the website. We go to the 65 radio stations of GCIS. We put it on national media, community media. That's how we publicize ourselves. But obviously the MDDA website is the best place to go if you didn't get there. So I'm going to ask Cheryl next to me to deal with that because she's also acting in that research space. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Access to research.
Thank you, Tia. Just to talk about the research area, we do have strong, good relationships with the universities around the country, the University of Limpopo, UNISA, UJ, FITS, UCT, the Saul Plaatje Institute in Rhodes, the ones that are basically invested in media and community media. The approach we've taken in terms of research in the past is we've got a small research department which is also in charge of capacity building. So we actually, we commission research and they do it on our behalf. So it's basically following a normal supply chain process. And we have, a lot of the universities have carried out research for us. But I take your point about maybe going and speaking to them about utilizing their students and maybe managing the research ourselves and using their students as a learning process for the students as well. So up to this stage, we haven't done it like that. It's purely commissioning research from universities as well as from other research providers such as Media Monitoring Africa, etc.
Thank you. Thank you, Cheryl. Then the last three questions, I think, were what kind of support we provide to the stations. For us, it's research, it's capacity building, it's through its grant funding, it's seed funding, it's and then the Act also provides for what it calls emergency funding, or it says we must provide support when a project is in dire straits so that it doesn't die. So we've got that kind of funding. So it's financial support and non-financial support in that regard. So we're actually looking at being big on capacity building, training them on governance and so forth. We did a skills audit in this financial year, and so we also want to ensure that they also get digital training skills, and that's what we focused on last year. But then it would not help if they're not going to be on the digital space. And because of the high data costs. So we are working on that. Are the stations given a choice to appeal? Yes, they are. I think the ICASA has got a CCC the committee that they go through. If I give an example, I think in 2018, Siyathuthuka had lost its license. It appealed successfully. It was reinstated. It went back on air. And the state. So if you apply to the MDDA and you are a licensee, and you're looking for funding, we at least check if your license is not expiring in 6 months, because you must apply to ICASA for renewal at least 6 months before the expiry of the license. But these are all the regulatory issues, the licenses and the revoking. We don't do that. We establish this station. So if they actually get revoked or they go off air for whatever reason, it takes us back, because it does not, for us, but we're going to have to check that, it does not always mean that there was no need for that station in that area. But that's what happens. And so both, I think it is incumbent to all of us, including this committee, the honorable members, to ensure that we support the stations to at least adhere to their broadcast license conditions, and we can support them with training and so forth, because when we fund them, we also give them stipends, salaries, stipends, rental money, we even give them money for the AG, because we're going to ask for audited financial statements, we even give them money because we ask you so that we can monitor the spending on our money when we give you in tranches, we even give you money for bank charges, 500 rand flat rate per month. So those are the things we actually really get into details. Money for stationery and so forth. We provide money, not only infrastructure, we provide money to run the station. But then the issue is, if we support at that level of giving you stationery and the printer and bank charges, when we walk away, what would we have put in place so that you survive beyond our funding? That is the main issue here. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Arnold. You want a follow-up? Just one follow-up.
Just one question, yeah. A very short question, because I'm concerned. Can I proceed?
Yeah.
One of the challenges set on page 4 is, and I forgot to ask that, that's what happens when you arrive late for a meeting like this. challenges, public servants and politically affiliated individuals serving in the management and boards of radio stations contrary to legislative regulations. This is concerning, and maybe the MDDA and the GN can answer this as well. What's being done about this? Because this is a threat to media, especially community radio stations in South Africa.
Which page?
Page 4. The second slide, or the sustainability challenges. I think it's the second point. Thank you.
So you find a community organization who says it's non profitable. So ideally, it's members of the community who have come together to form this community radio station. So there are three scenarios. One is that you find along the way the management, and not the board, opt to start to use this community radio station as a resource generation entity of some sort. So it prioritizes it giving money for whatever reason and diverting from its main major funding, which informs us saying we're funding a non-profit organization. Now for you to get funding, your board members, you must not have a board member who is a public servant. I'm trying to be easier.
Mm.
And then you find that in the board, there is a Thembi Seweya who is a clerk or a manager something in a particular government department. And when they make their packaging for submission to us, at our level, we approve. Now, when they go to SARS, the rules of SARS when they're supposed to give them adverts says in your organogram as a whole, you have got a public servant, and a public servant cannot do business with the state. We picked up one actually, they thought they were impressing us, Umgani FM, when we visited them, to say, no, even our board were capacitated, we even have Mamang is an accountant, is working guy in this department, and we're like, what? It's not supposed to be like that. If you're a public servant, you cannot be on the board. And these are some of the things, as we do these roadshows, to highlight and then alert them that your board must not have a public representative in the structure. What we've also done, just that I've got a running stomach, I apologize, was to speak about the new grant funding model. I'm not sure if you spoke about it before. Yes, which is going to assist us. It sounds and it will look like our mandate as MDDA is not to give the money. It's ours when we tick our boxes off that we have worked, is when we have empowered community radio stations, when we have given them the resources. But we are moving from an era of 8 years where there was no accountability, where a person could have applied in 2014, another one applies in 2017. The one in 2017 gets granted, and the one who has applied a long time ago was not given. And that's why we said, no, we're scrapping everything. We're writing letters to all of them. We're starting afresh. We've got a new grant funding model which stipulates all the steps, which protect us, which also protects the recipient of the money, so that they can also take accountability. And the window is opened twice a year, at the first semester and the second semester. So there's no longer a haphazard application when you wake up. So we do a window opening to say, we've opened, apply. Then we reward. Then in the second semester, we've opened, apply. Then we reward. In terms of, I wanted to speak so closely about Northern Cape. That in Northern Cape, do we have four? Yes, we have got four. It is a worry factor for us. But of course, it's given by demographics. We went to Colesberg. We have met a team who says they are ready. They have got offices with Love Life, and that they will want to venture into the space. Then we said to them, we will assist you, also lift you up with cash so that you can get the license, and then we can see how we can resolve that. Because that assists us in fully living up to our mandate. The other reality which we are facing, which we are trying to solve, is that we inherit an institution where other provinces, there's a clash, there's congestion. If you open this and this, they're in the same radius, they compete even for the same audience, same language, same culture, it is a problem. And unfortunately, we can't go and say, you must close, you must not close. What we have said is that we want to relook into areas and platforms where we have not been able to. And hopefully, me and Zuke, we dream every day, that the most important thing that we want to do, which we think as MDDA, we have not necessarily focused on, and in relooking into repealing the Act must assist us, one, to respond in terms of what I ask. Because you also find radio online. What is the Act of the MDDA saying about that? Yes, and we're looking into closing that gap so that we can fully live up to. The second one, which we are looking into, and this is the dream that we have and we're sharing it with you, is that the deaf community do not participate in radio. So if you're deaf, you can't participate in radio. And we're looking into studies and research and finding out that why can't we take all our 168 or so radio stations. You have a common national app which you can download on your phone, and then you choose which radio station you want, a community radio station. Then a hand will appear, and sign language,
then you participate in radio. It's another area which we, during the three print, broadcasting and television, we have not necessarily looked into. I hope. So the answer there is that if you're a public servant, you're not supposed to be on the board. And majority of them, when they don't get the funding when they apply, actually when they don't get the financial request from GCIS, and you ask, GCIS will tell you no, our financial policy says, this in the board, there's a public servant, therefore we can't fund them. We can't place advert on them. The other thing that we're doing is that we, together with GCIS, there's a 30% which must be given back to community radio stations in terms of advertisement. Now, there's been a gap that there are certain departments which do not place adverts on community radio stations. They'd rather go to mainstream media platforms. And it is up to us and actually this committee to make sure, not necessarily ourselves, to make sure that we knock on their door and we create some form of a binding document to bind them, and also working with Treasure that maybe assist us that in their spending of media advertisement, if they have not spent 30% on community media, then something must be wrong with them. Some form of punishment must be placed on them, because the level which has been existing does not help. Departments know, municipalities know. A municipality situated in a community radio station next to them will not advertise there. Actually, they go to community radio stations and demand to speak on air for free. But if they go to mainstream media platforms, they don't do that. We are busy with GCI, with Treasury. The Treasury asks that we have this thing in paper. How do you help us to enforce it so that maybe it can, I don't know the word, maybe an old school would be wrong, that if they bring a report and it does not show the 30%, we don't even choose for them, it does not show that they've spent at least 30% of their advertisement on community platforms, then there's something wrong. Okay.
Thank you very much, and thanks, DM. We really appreciate the report. I think you have had the inputs from members that you must go and rework the the report and submit to us, which has got, if it is trained in Limpopo, we must know, 5 are in Vembe, 2 Skukune, 3 Waterberg, like that. And we want to take this opportunity, DM, to thank you and the team for coming to the select committee to make a presentation. We'll call you because when we want those details, when we want, well, go for constituency work, we must be able to know these are the areas where there are challenges, so that when you come back, we are able to look into that. You are released.
Thank you so much.
We need just 5 minutes for housekeeping issues from committee members.